Chapter 85. What was behind Mr. Panks on Little Dorrit's hand? It was at this time that Mr. Panks, in discharge of his compact with Clennam, revealed to him the whole of his gypsy story, and told him Little Dorrit's fortune. Her father was heir at law to a great estate that had long lain unknown of, unclaimed, and accumulating. His right was now clear, nothing interposed in his way, the Marshalsea gates stood open, the Marshalsea walls were down, a few flourishes of his pen, and he was extremely rich. In his tracking out of the claim to its complete establishment, Mr. Panks had shown a sagacity that nothing could baffle, and a patience and secrecy that nothing could tire. I little thought, sir, apostrophe said Panks, when you and I crossed Smithfield that night, and I told you, what sort of a collector I was, that this would come of it. I little thought, sir, when I told you you were not of the Clennams of Cornwall, that I was ever going, to tell you who were of the Dorrits of Dorsetshire. Apostrophe he then went on to detail. How, having that name recorded in his notebook, he was first attracted by the name alone. How, having often found two exactly similar names, even belonging to the same place, to involve no traceable consanguinity, near or distant, he did not at first give much heed to this, except in the way of speculation, as to what a surprising change would be made in the condition of a little seamstress, if she could be shown to have any interest in so large a property. How he rather supposed himself to have pursued the idea into its next degree, because there was something uncommon in the quiet little seamstress, which pleased him, and provoked his curiosity. How he had felt his way inch by inch, and molded out, sir, that was Mr. Panks' expression, grain by grain. How, in the beginning of the labor described by this new verb, and to render which the more expressive Mr. Panks shut his eyes in pronouncing it, and shook his hair over them, he had alternated from sudden lights and hopes to sudden darkness and no hopes, and back again, and back again. How he had made acquaintances in the prison, expressly that he might come and go there as all other comers and goers did. And how his first ray of light was unconsciously given him by Mr. Dorrit himself, and by his son, to both of whom he easily became known, with both of whom he talked much, casually but always mulling you'll observe, apostrophe said Mr. Panks, colon, and from whom he derived, without being at all suspected, two or three little points of family history which, as he began to hold clues of his own, suggested others. How it had at length become plain to Mr. Panks that he had made a real discovery of the heir at law to a great fortune, and that his discovery had but to be ripened to legal fullness and perfection. How he had, thereupon, sworn his landlord, Mr. Rugg, to secrecy in a solemn manner, and taken him into mulling partnership. How they had employed John Chivery as their sole clerk and agent, seeing to whom he was devoted. And how, until the present hour, when authorities mighty in the bank, and learned in the law declared their successful labors ended, they had confided in no other human being. So if the whole thing had broken down, sir, apostrophe concluded Panks, at the very last, say the day before the other day, when I showed you our papers in the prison yard, or say that very day, nobody but ourselves would have been cruelly disappointed, or a penny the worse. Apostrophe, Clennam, who had been almost incessantly shaking hands with him throughout the narrative, was reminded by this to say, in an amazement which even the preparation he had had for the main disclosure smoothed down, my dear Mr. Panks, this must have cost you a great sum of money. Apostrophe, pretty well, sir, apostrophe said the triumphant Panks. No trifle, though we did it as cheap as it could be done. And the outlay was a difficulty, let me tell you. Apostrophe, a difficulty. Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated Clennam. But the difficulties you have so wonderfully conquered in the whole business. Apostrophe, apostrophe, shaking his hand again. I'll tell you how I did it, apostrophe said the delighted Panks, putting his hair into a condition as elevated as himself. first, I spent all I had of my own. That wasn't much. Apostrophe, I am sorry for it, apostrophe said Clennam. Not that it matters now, though. Then, what did you do? Apostrophe, then, apostrophe answered Panks, I borrowed a sum of my proprietor. Apostrophe, of Mr. Casby? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Clennam. He's a fine old fellow. Apostrophe, noble old boy, and he? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Panks, entering on a series of the driest snorts. Generous old buck. Confiding old boy. Philanthropic old buck. Benevolent old boy. 20%. I engaged to pay him, sir. But we never do business for less at our shop. Apostrophe, Arthur felt an awkward consciousness of having, in his exultant condition, been a little premature. I said to that boiling over old Christian, apostrophe Mr. Panks pursued, appearing greatly to relish this descriptive epithet, that I had got a little project on hand, a hopeful one. I told him a hopeful one, which wanted a certain small capital. I proposed to him to lend me the money on my note, which he did, a 20, sticking the 20 on in a business-like way, and putting it into the note, to look like a part of the principal. If I had broken down after that, I should have been his grubber for the next 7 years at half wages and double grind. But he's a perfect patriarch, and it would do a man good to serve him on such terms on any terms. Apostrophe, Arthur for his life could not have said with confidence, whether Panks really thought so or not. When that was gone, sir, apostrophe resumed Panks, and it did go, though I dribbled it out like so much blood, I had taken Mr. Rugg into the secret. I proposed to borrow of Mr. Rugg, or of Miss Rugg. It's the same thing. She made a little money by a speculation in the common pleas once. He lent it a 10, and thought that pretty high. But Mr. Rugg's a red-haired man, sir, and gets his hair cut. And as to the crown of his hat, it's high. And as to the brim of his hat, it's narrow. And there's no more benevolence bubbling out of him than out of a ninepin. Apostrophe, your own recompense for all this, Mr. Panks, apostrophe said Clennam, ought to be a large one. Apostrophe, I don't mistrust getting it, sir, apostrophe said Panks. I have made no bargain. I owed you one on that score. Now I have paid it. Money out of pocket made good, time fairly allowed for, and Mr. Rugg's bill settled, £1,000 would be a fortune to me. That matter I place in your hands. I authorize you now, to break all this to the family in any way you think best. Miss Amy Dorrit will be with Mrs. Finching this morning. The sooner done the better. Can't be done too soon. Apostrophe, this conversation took place in Clennam's bedroom, while he was yet in bed. For Mr. Panks had knocked up the house, and made his way in, very early in the morning, and, without once sitting down or standing still, had delivered himself of the whole of his details, illustrated with a variety of documents, at the bedside. He now said he would go, and look up Mr. Rugg, from whom his excited state of mind appeared to require another back, and bundling up his papers, and exchanging one more hearty shake of the hand with Clennam, he went at full speed downstairs, and steamed off. Clennam, of course, resolved to go direct to Mr. Casby's. He dressed and got out so quickly, that he found himself at the corner of the Patriarchal Street nearly an hour before her time. But he was not sorry to have the opportunity of calming himself with a leisurely walk. When he returned to the street, and had knocked at the bright brass knocker, he was informed that she had come, and was shown upstairs to Flora's breakfast room. Little Dorrit was not there herself, but Flora was, and testified the greatest amazement at seeing him. Good gracious, Arthur Doyce and Clennam! ... cried that lady, who would have ever thought of seeing such a sight as this, and pray excuse a rapper for upon my word I really never, and a faded check too which is worse, but our little friend is making me a, not that I need mind mentioning it to you for you must know that there are such things a skirt, and having arranged, that a trying on should take place after breakfast is the reason, though I wish, not so badly starched. ... I ought to make an apology, ... said Arthur, for so early, and abrupt a visit, but you will excuse it, when I tell you the cause. ... and time's forever fled Arthur, ... returned Mrs. Finching, pray excuse me Doyce and Clennam infinitely more correct, and though unquestionably distant still tis distance lends enchantment to the view, at least I don't mean that, and if I did I suppose it would depend considerably on the nature of the view, but I'm running on again, and you put it all out of my head. ... she glanced at him tenderly, and resumed. And times forever fled I was going to say it would have sounded strange indeed for Arthur Clennam Doyce and Clennam naturally quite different to make apologies for coming here at any time, but that is past, and what is past can never be recalled except in his own case as poor Mr. F. said, when he was in spirits cucumber, and therefore never ate it. ... she was making the tea when Arthur came in, and now hastily finished that operation. ... she said, all mystery and whisper, as she shut down the teapot lid, is sitting prosingly breaking his new-laid egg in the back parlor over the city article exactly like the woodpecker tapping, and need never know that you are here, and our little friend you are well aware may be fully trusted, when she comes down from cutting out on the large table overhead. ... Arthur then told her, in the fewest words, that it was their little friend he came to see, and what he had to announce to their little friend. At which astounding intelligence, Flora clasped her hands, fell into a tremble, and shed tears of sympathy and pleasure, like the good-natured creature she really was. For goodness sake let me get out of the way first, ... said Flora, putting her hands to her ears and moving towards the door, or I know I shall go off dead, and screaming and make everybody worse, and the dear little thing only this morning looking so nice, and neat and good, and yet so poor, and now a fortune is she really, and deserves it too. And might I mention it to Mr. F.S. and Arthur not Doyce and Clennam for this once, or if objectionable not on any account. ... Arthur nodded his free permission, since Flora shut out all verbal communication. Flora nodded in return to thank him, and hurried out of the room. Little Dorrit's step was already on the stairs, and in another moment she was at the door. Do what he could to compose his face, he could not convey so much of an ordinary expression into it, but that the moment she saw it, she dropped her work, and cried, Mr. Clennam! What's the matter? ... nothing, nothing. That is, no misfortune has happened. I have come to tell you something, but it is a piece of great good fortune. ... good fortune? ... wonderful fortune. ... they stood in a window, and her eyes, full of light, were fixed upon his face. He put an arm about her, seeing her likely to sink down. She put a hand upon that arm, partly to rest upon it, and partly so to preserve their relative positions as that her intent look at him should be shaken by no change of attitude in either of them. Her lips seemed to repeat wonderful fortune. ... he repeated it again, aloud. Dear little Dorrit. Your father. ... the ice of the pale face broke at the word, and little lights and shoots of expression passed all over it. They were all expressions of pain. Her breath was faint and hurried. Her heart beat fast. He would have clasped the little figure closer, but he saw that the eyes appealed to him not to be moved. Your father can be free within this week. He does not know it. We must go to him from here, to tell him of it. Your father will be free within a few days. Your father will be free within a few hours. Remember, we must go to him from here, to tell him of it. ... that brought her back. Her eyes were closing, but they opened again. This is not all the good fortune. This is not all the wonderful good fortune, my dear little Dorrit. Shall I tell you more? Apostrophe, her lips shaped yes. Apostrophe, your father will be no beggar when he is free. He will want for nothing. Shall I tell you more? Remember, he knows nothing of it. We must go to him, from here, to tell him of it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she seemed to entreat him for a little time. He held her in his arm, and, after a pause, bent down his ear to listen. Did you ask me to go on? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe, he will be a rich man. He is a rich man. A great sum of money is waiting to be paid over to him as his inheritance. You are all henceforth very wealthy. Bravest and best of children, I thank heaven that you are rewarded. Apostrophe, apostrophe, as he kissed her, she turned her head towards his shoulder, and raised her arm towards his neck, cried out, Father! 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 Apostrophe, apostrophe, and swooned away. Upon which Flora returned to take care of her, and hovered about her on a sofa, intermingling kind offices and incoherent scraps of conversation in a manner so confounding, that whether she pressed the Marshalsea to take a spoonful of unclaimed dividends, for it would do her good, or whether she congratulated little Dorrit's father on coming into possession of 100,000 smelling bottles, or whether she explained that she put 75,000 drops of spirits of lavender on 50,000 pounds of lump sugar, and that she entreated little Dorrit to take that gentle restorative, or whether she bathed the foreheads of Doyce and Clennam in vinegar, and gave the late Mr. F. more air, no one with any sense of responsibility could have undertaken to decide. A tributary stream of confusion, moreover, poured in from an adjoining bedroom, where Mr. F.S. and appeared, from the sound of her voice, to be in a horizontal posture, awaiting her breakfast, and from which power that inexorable lady snapped off short taunts, whenever she could get a hearing, as, don't believe it's his doing. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and he needn't take no credit to himself for it. Apostrophe, and it'll be long enough, I expect, afore he'll give up any of his own money. Apostrophe, apostrophe, all designed to disparage Clennam's share in the discovery, and to relieve those inveterate feelings with which Mr. F.S. and regarded him. But little Dorrit's solicitude to get to her father, and to carry the joyful tidings to him, and not to leave him in his jail a moment with this happiness in store for him, and still unknown to him, did more for her speedy restoration than all the skill and Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.